Hi, and welcome to a Keith Review number 2, the next in the series of podcasts where I try to take the lid off my learning and show you how I'm learning about food, nutrition and change, and hopefully on a path to a healthier lifestyle. This last few weeks, I've been looking at diets and microbes. As usual, I'm going to tell you what I did, secondly, what I learned, thirdly, the ideas I had or further action I took, and finally, how I feel about my learning. You will find all the links that I make on the webpage for seriouslyfunfood.com/podcasts, and you'll find all the resources and information right there. Well, let me begin first of all with what I did. Well, my big read these last few weeks has been The Diet Myth by Tim Spector. Tim Spector is the Professor of Genetic Epidemiology at King's College London. He's won quite a few awards and apparently has published over 700 academic papers. Very, very prolific. Since 2011, it seems he's been leading the largest microbiome project in the UK, which uses genetic sequencing to study bacteria in the guts of 5,000 twins. And if you read the book, The Diet Myth, you'll see why the twins are important. Since 2014, he's been the lead of the British Gut Project, which is a really interesting thing. It leads me on to point number 2, which is the other thing I've been doing the last few weeks is to look at the British Gut website and what that project is all about. The third and final thing I've done over the last few weeks is I listened to a podcast by the American Microbiome Institute. Now, just to explain microbiome, because microbes and microbiome were fairly new things for me. Obviously, microbes are the small little things that run around your body. The microbiome is the environment in which they flourish. Anyway, the American Microbiome Institute is a non-profit organisation, apparently established in 2013, you can see how new it is, dedicated to advancing microbiome science and education. And in the podcast, they had Drs. Erica and Justin Sonnenberg, who are from Stanford University, and they were interviewed in part about a recent book that they've co-authored called The Good Gut: Taking Control of Your Weight, Your Mood, and Your Long-Term Health. It was interesting because while the diet myth focuses on gut microbes, the American Microbiome Institute podcasts look at the wider field of microbes. So, let me move on from what I did to what I learnt. I'll talk first of all then about the diet myth, and probably there were 5 things that I learned here. First of all, we all possess a unique set of microbes, a bit like a fingerprint. That was interesting for me, and the whole notion of microbes, right? Because I thought they were kind of nasty germs that we would need to get rid of. Apparently not. They are essential for our body and our health. And in fact, the antibiotics we take to kill them do more harm than good, possibly because they wipe out your gut microbiome and could allow other negative microbes to flourish. Number 2, there's a cycle going on. Our diet affects our microbes. And also, our microbes affect how we digest food, and so they can influence our health. Number 3, the key to health and weight may not be in a particular diet, but in the microbes in our body. Quite new, quite revolutionary, but that for me was really interesting. It was the key takeaway from the book, The Diet Myth. Given that each person's microbiome is individual, there seems to be a strong case for having an individual approach to diet. Makes sense. And I'm going to talk more about this later, because there are many who argue that that makes the balanced diet approach, which is advocated by governments around the world, null and void, because it's a one-size-fits-all approach. Possibly. Then again, possibly not. I'll explain later why I think it's a possibly not. Number 4, A more diverse microbiome is more likely to lead to better health. Interesting. Number five, and this was interesting for me, number five, because it's about research, that the search for the yes-no answers by scientists or researchers usually ends up being wrong. You know, is fat bad for you, yes or no? Is cholesterol good or bad for you, yes or no? The reality of food and diet is inevitably too messy for that, says Tim Spector. I love the idea of it being too messy because I recently wrote a blog about learning and the learning cycle and the messy reality of learning. And as a learner, I like to kind of hook things on to things that I understand. And the messy reality of learning, I understand. The messy reality of food and nutrition makes total sense to me. Anyway, I went on to write a blog about the book, and you can get that on the website. It's a brief review, and you can look there and find out more about it. Let me move on to the second thing that I've been learning, which was from the Microbiome Institute podcast. It was number five, episode number five. And I guess there are three kind of things I took away here. The first one, and this is interesting, is we have microbes. Well, microbes we have in the gut, right? But we also have microbes on our skin, in our mouth, and vagina, if you have one. But most of the microbes are in the gut because that's where they get plenty of nutrients. The microbes outnumber our body cells by 10 to 1. That's just mind-blowing. And they are passed from mother to child. So at birth, you pass your microbes as a mother to your child. Research in the last, 5 to 10 years is showing the incredibly important role that microbes may play in our health. I say may, there's a lot of mays and mites. But that role it plays starts at childbirth. Interestingly, right? Because babies born through a cesarean or a C-section are more likely to develop allergies, possibly due to the lack of microbes being passed on through the vagina. Likewise, over-concern with cleanliness for babies is negative, as they tend to engage with microbes and germs to build up immunity against them. Over-hygienic environments may play a role in the increasing number of allergies that children have today. That's great, because that validates me telling my daughter she can splash in muddy puddles, indeed roll around in the mud. It was probably all good advice as she was growing up. That's the first. The second thing was really interesting for me, the discussion about whether research on mice is valid or reflective of human studies. This put me on full alert because I think this is a really interesting area that I've read a lot about. And the idea, ever since I started studying nutrition, you read about researchers cherry picking research. So that's where a scientist only refers to the research that supports their hypothesis and ignores the rest. And this happens with mice research, and I see it everywhere. People saying, you know, that mice research isn't valid for humans. And then several pages later, in a book, they're quoting mice research that supports their argument. Well, enter the humanized mouse. What a great idea. Never heard of this before. Apparently, scientists give germ-free mice a human microbiota, like a microbiome, which the mice then adopt and tend to keep. It doesn't evolve. So you're creating almost a humanized mouse. Why do they do this? Well, because in humans, when you do research, it's so difficult to control the variables. For example, the food that you're going to eat if you're testing for a certain diet. And that's why often we can only make associations in most nutritional research. But with mice, They can control the diet. They can control the whole exposure to other factors and really get a better grip on cause and effect. That can help create a hypothesis that we wouldn't otherwise be able to get. And then you can attempt to test that in mice and humans. That's interesting. It's not a perfect solution, but certainly moving towards maybe a better and best in the circumstances solution. Number three, another key question that they addressed in the interview is the idea of the response time of a change in diet to impact the microbiome. So if you change what you eat, how does that affect your microbes? What's the time span? Well, the answer, surprise, surprise, was it depends, which is reassuring because that means it's probably right. It can take years. In fact, it can take generations, but there are also possibly short-term changes. Finally, the interviewees go on to give recommendations for changing their diet to foster a more diverse microbiota, which I mentioned can lead to better health. I found it interesting because they were really cautious, you know, about overselling the benefits of the research as being a kind of a magic bullet. But they were very keen on doing what can be done to promote health without having to wait 50 years for the science to give a positive answer. Yeah, it's always a delicate balance, I guess. And the challenges of not overselling include the fact that most studies are not based on humans, they're based on mice. However, with that caveat in mind and with a wish to communicate at least what you could call the do no harm suggestions, they recommend two things. A, eat a high fiber diet. Fiber is fermented by microbiota and becomes short chain fatty acids, which then can reduce inflammation, body weight, and the risk of colon cancer. B, don't overuse antibiotics because they're going to destroy your gut microbes. Fascinating. Well, that's it. I've talked there about the diet myth and what I've learned from that and from the podcast episode. Let me come back for a third learning point to that question of microbiomes indicating that a personalized approach is needed to diet. And actually, I couldn't agree more with that. In fact, one of the reasons that I used to visit a traditional Chinese medicine, apparently TCM, new acronym for me, when I lived in China, is I really like their personalized and holistic approach. First of all, because they don't just inspect the place where you have the problem, but they also look at your eyes, your face, your tongue, they listen to your breathing, they even smell you, apparently. They check your pulse, and then they ask you questions, often which seem irrelevant at the time. But, and I read up on this, there are 10 questions they always asked, which are geared to getting a complete understanding of what's going on with you. So, although I know, and in recent months have discovered that the science behind TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, is heavily criticized, it works for me. Acupuncture, massage, sometimes Chinese medicine, work for me. Maybe it's a placebo effect, I don't know. But the thing is, yoga, and I do some yoga, also works for me. It makes me feel great. And I doubt very much there's much science behind yoga. I might be wrong. Note to myself, I need to read up on that. So while science is important, I think people need to listen to their own bodies and find a way of eating or a diet or a lifestyle that works for them. Yeah, of course, we want good nutritional advice. And for me, the balanced diets proposed by USA MyPlate, the UK Eat Well guides, they give that. I don't think a personalised approach makes those approaches redundant at all, do they? But I do agree we need to find our own way. And what the Diet Myth book was saying about the individual nature of microbiomes would seem to support that idea too. But you can see why your nutritional therapy and diet gurus are cropping up everywhere, because they offer a more individual approach. Well, at least that's what many of them claim to do. It's not always true. I've seen a lot of diets out there that are restrictive and take a one-size-fits-all approach. But by and large, they have this more individual, personalised approach. Anyway, I was going to say the learning point for me here is this division between the two approaches to nutrition and diet, it's becoming much clearer for me. So on the one hand, that of the dietitians who are regulated by law and the ones who work to formulate the government guidelines in most countries. And on the other hand, the nutritional therapists who in general seem to take a more holistic approach to diet and health. And the other week there was an article by the British Association of Nutritional Therapists on their website reacting to advice from the British Dietetic Association about fad diets, about not following fad diets. And the BANT, or BANT, the nutritional therapist, said that's not valid because some of those diets actually do work. And the one-size-fits-all approach of the government guidelines isn't very good, or is not personalised or holistic enough. Anyway, that divide's becoming clearer for me. You can see the links on the webpage to those articles if you want to read them. So I'm going to wind up and move on to my last point, which is about ideas or actions that came out of what I've been studying. Well, there's a couple of things that came out of all of this. One was that I discovered somebody called Chris Kessler, a doctor. And I read or looked through a free download from his website. It was a gut health brochure on the topic of microbes, right? I was recommended Chris as a solid source of nutritional information from someone on the Reddit forum. I don't know if you know Reddit, but they have forums on all topics. They have forums on nutrition. And I went there to, I often go there to find some information. Now, his articles certainly seem very solid, but as I browsed the gut health brochure, I became a little unsure. And I'm saying this as a learner, as somebody who's trying to fit new things into his frame of reference, and as somebody who's reflecting on how we evaluate sources of information. So let me tell you what I thought about this process, right? He as I read the gut health brochure, it became clear that he is an advocate of the paleo diet. Now, if you don't know about the paleo diet, you can Google it and have a look. It's something I need to look into more, but for me, there are still two things I don't get about that, and probably I just need to research more. But the first is, with the paleo diet, which is suggests that we eat the diet of our ancestors in the Ice Age, meat and fat and low carbs or no carbs, no grains. How do we know what our ancestors ate millions of years ago? There are no records. Even the anthropologists don't know. And secondly, what we do know from the field of anthropology is that humans certainly won't have all eaten the same diet. It will have varied enormously depending on the region. So the notion of one paleo diet, I'm not sure about. Anyway, that aside, I noticed as I read the Gut Health brochure, he kept coming back to the paleo diet, almost as if he was trying to sell something. And I had that strange sensation of being in a sales funnel. So I went back to the website and just thought, I'll have a look. Is he selling anything? And there is a shop selling supplements. Again, supplements are not bad, but I just had to wonder, is there an agenda here? Another thing that worried me a bit is that he advocates the GAPS diet. That's G-A-P-S. GAPS diet has had its critics, and not few. I mean, including the Healthline website, Science Based Medicine, the angry chef Anthony Warner, the dietitian Zoe Connor, and others. Mainly because it's based on anecdote, and there's no scientific research to support its effect. What's more, it's criticised because it can target vulnerable people, and the nutritional balance it proposes could lead to malnutrition. I guess the concern about vulnerable people, you know, GAPS also makes claims about healing autism. And I think any claims about diet healing autism is a whole new can of worms in itself. So I was extremely surprised to see Dr. Keller advocating it. He's clearly a very well qualified doctor. His brochures are full of science. They seem to be really well researched and professionally presented. And then you get these kind of contradictions or flags coming up. Maybe I need to investigate more. But for me, what's interesting as a learner, it confirmed how much we need to be aware of people's stances or philosophies they follow and the agendas they may have, maybe to sell something, or affiliations they have to organisations, and how all of this may influence what they're saying. One more thing I did was I listened to the wonderful BBC Radio 4 food programme. And if you haven't found this, it's available as podcasts, usually a day after it's broadcast, so you can listen wherever in the world you are. They have a treasure chest of stuff in the podcast archive. And I found one podcast on microbiomes and the Hadza tribe. And it was interesting because it came back to full circle, Tim Spector, the guy at the Start, right? And so this podcast starts out with the BBC recording crew searching for Tim Spector, who's gone missing after he went for a poo on the savannah. And he did it so he can analyse changes in his gut microbiome whilst he's been eating with the Hadza tribe. And what happens to him? Well, you'll have to listen to the programme to find out. I'm not going to spoil it for you. There you go. You can go away and listen to the podcast. I tend to listen to podcasts in the evening before bedtime. It's a nice quiet downtime for me and very easy to do. I'm going to finish now on my fourth part, how I feel about my learning now and my identity. Well, I feel more knowledgeable and I feel more confident. I certainly feel my knowledge base is growing as I read more and listen more. I am extremely reluctant, as you may have noticed, to take a stance in favour of one diet or another. Mainly because the more I discover, the more I realise there's so much I do not know. Strangely enough, though, that not knowing builds my confidence. And goes back to what Tim said, one of the clearest flags to me is that whenever I see a yes-no answer or a black and white answer to a nutritional question, I'm confident it will likely be wrong. I notice I'm also more critical now and a bit eager to research different sources of information if I have enough time. I do feel like a detective at times, and whilst it can be rewarding, and it is, but the up of a discovery followed by the down of a contradiction does make it feel like a roller coaster ride at times. Well, that's it. I am going to emphasise in my learning and in this podcast that, you know, I'm not advocating any point of view. I am not being critical of experts in their fields. I'm just trying to find my way and use this podcast as a way of showing the learning journey that I'm on. As a minimum, maybe others will find empathy with me trying to learn about nutrition. Well, it's been an extremely exciting few weeks, actually, as I've learned about things that weren't even on my radar before. Microbiome, humanized mice, fantastic. Listen, I hope you have a great week, keep learning, and really enjoy the world of food and nutrition. Thank you.